Now to a problem in space today. A Russian cargo ship carrying oxygen, water, and spare parts was supposed to dock with the International Space Station. Instead, it sailed right by the station, leaving engineers on Earth scratching their heads. NPR science correspondent Joe Palca is following the story. He joins me here in the studio. Joe, this doesn't sound good. Is the crew on the space station in danger?
No, there's no danger to the crew. This cargo ship sailed by with a margin of about 2 miles, so they were never in any danger at all.
Well, what was supposed to happen? What went wrong?
Well, what was supposed to happen was this was a cargo ship that was launched from Kazakhstan on Wednesday. And this is typical. They carry up supplies, as you said, water and various things like that. It docks with the space station, which means it forms a link, and then they carry the stuff back and forth. Well, the cargo ship has a data connection to the space station, and for some reason that radio data connection didn't work. And so the cargo ship said, well, I can't dock. I don't know what's going on, and it just sailed right on by.
The cargo ship is manned or unmanned?
Unmanned.
Okay. And why did the data link fail?
You said they're scratching their heads. That's why they're scratching their heads. They don't know. If this system is broken, if it doesn't work at all, there is a backup system, but they're still trying to figure out what. I heard them discussing the engineers on Earth talking to the engineers on the space station, and right now they're going through the checklist, what could have happened, but they don't have an answer right now.
Okay, we mentioned oxygen, water, spare parts on this cargo ship. What else?
Yeah, it's experimental hardware. It's propellant to keep the space station in the proper orbit, but the NASA people I talked with today said this was not critical cargo. This was not stuff that the space station is waiting for. They were supplied a few days or weeks ago. And this is something they were looking forward to having as spares. So they're not too fussed about it right now.
Meantime, though, this cargo ship has sailed by. Where is it going?
Well, this is the interesting thing. So it's just gone by, but it's not going faster or slower. It's just in a slightly different orbit from the space station. So basically, they have to wait. They think it'll be about 48 hours before what's called the orbital mechanics, the two orbits link up again, and then they'll be close enough to try again, presuming they figure out what went wrong.
Okay. NPR science correspondent Joe Palca, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block.
That's the sound of thousands of falling dominoes knocking over a string of carefully stacked popsicle sticks, blocks, and plastic cups. Imagine the chain reactions you set up as a kid, but 100 times bigger and more involved.
The creation is the second place winner in NPR's Edward Muybridge contest. In the 19th century, the English photographer developed new ways to freeze motion with his camera and to project moving images. He's especially well known for his sequence of a horse in motion. A couple of months back, we invited you to submit your Muybridge-inspired art after we aired a piece about a Corcoran Gallery retrospective on the eccentric innovator.
We received hundreds of submissions inspired by this legendary innovator, sculptures, stop-motion videos, and even a talking banana.
Do not approach a banana in a dark alley. They will attack you.
The chain reaction video we heard earlier was created by Tim Fort of St. Paul, Minnesota.
Fort calls himself a professional kinetic artist.
Sometimes I modestly refer to myself as Luna Tim Rex, the kinetic king. Other times I'm a destructural engineer. It's basically I'm trying to find different chain reaction techniques besides just domino tumbling. If I want grant money, I refer to them as mechanically iterative devices.
He incorporates Muybridge into his winning device by triggering a test tube to pull a string which releases a flip book. Each page has a frame of Muybridge's iconic horse. As they fall away, the horse appears to gallop, much like it did back in the 1870s.
I've always been kind of a fan of his because he's a movie pioneer.
Artist Michael Brown incorporated the same horse into his submission. He used small mirrors and light-emitting diodes to make the animal gallop across a bell jar. The creation, which won first place in our contest, resides in the lobby of an apartment building in San Francisco.
The funny thing is actually one of the tenants in that building is the one who told me about this contest.
People sometimes stop by the building, Brown says, just to see the little horse run. Our judges included film director Mark Neal, who once set Bono against a Muybridge-like grid in a U2 music video.
A I just love Muybridge because he's such a crazy character.
Neil and his fellow judges agreed that Muybridge would have been impressed by his influence so long after his death.
Neil only sees one issue for Muybridge, who often used nude models in his motion studies.
He'd probably want to see more, you know, naked women and men. That's the thing that struck me about. There's something very voyeuristic about what he did. So I think he might be a bit disappointed.
You can see all the winners of our Muybridge contest at npr.org's Picture Show blog. In other auto news, Toyota said today it's recalling more cars. This time the problem involves faulty valve springs in the engines of some of its high-end Lexus cars. About 140,000 vehicles in the U.S. could be affected. No injuries or accidents have been linked to the problem. But it is more bad news for Toyota, which yesterday announced that its sales in the U.S. last month fell 14%. Though that pain was felt by other car makers as well. NPR's Wendy Kaufman has more on the weakness in the auto industry.
The drop in sales was substantial. GM, Ford, Toyota, and Chrysler all had between 12 and 14% fewer sales last month. Nissan, Subaru, and Honda were also down.
Weak and a little worrisome
is how Michelle Krebs, an industry expert at Edmunds.com, describes the latest sales figures.
If you looked at the consumer confidence numbers this week, it shows you people are very nervous about their jobs, about the economy, and they just aren't spending money.
Especially on big-ticket items like cars. Krebs adds that for the first 6 months of the year, the relatively large number of fleet sales, say for rental cars, disguised the very weak consumer demand. The automakers tried to put a positive spin on yesterday's numbers, noting that June sales were higher than a year ago. But that's not saying much. Sales in June 2009 were very low, as buyers anticipated the Cash for Clunkers program. About the only automaker who could really claim a good month in June was Hyundai. The Korean automaker is coming on strong. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. The bad news is that the nation's labor market is limping. The good news, at least according to President Obama, is that it's still moving in the right direction.
We're not headed there fast enough for a lot of Americans. We're not headed there fast enough for me either. The recession dug us a hole of about 8 million jobs deep.
And months like June aren't going to get the country out of that hole anytime soon. The government's monthly jobs report released this morning found layoffs of temporary census workers more than offset private sector job growth. Overall, the economy shed 125,000 jobs last month. NPR's Tamara Keith reports.
Here's how you get to that number. The private sector created 83,000 jobs, but the public sector, government, was in serious negative territory. The census cut its payroll by 225,000 in June. Kathy Lee was among those cut. She started in April as an enumerator, counting San Diego residents who hadn't sent back their census forms.
And we went, knocked on their doors, and tried to fill out the survey with them.
Lee says she knew the job was temporary, but she hoped it would last until she found a full-time permanent job. Then one day in early June, her census gig ended abruptly.
And it was like, oh, no, I think we're pretty much done. This will be your last day. Like, literally, that's what happened.
But temporary census workers weren't the only government employees who got layoff notices in June. Kenny Druce was a patrolman in the Franklin Township Police Department in New Jersey.
Oh, I loved it. I wanted to be a cop since I was a kid.
Now he's applying for unemployment, and so is his wife, a kindergarten teacher. He says they both lost their jobs because of tight local budgets.
It's not so much the money that's the hard part, but we both loved what we did. I was just interested in it, and I wanted to do it. And my wife loved kids, and she wanted to be a teacher.
So far this year, state and local governments have cut 50,000 jobs, and many economists expect it to get worse, which puts that much more pressure on the private sector to lead the way out of this jobless recovery, says Philip Jefferson. He's a professor of economics at Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania.
It's not until we see robust job growth in the private sector that Americans are going to start to feel better and feel as though we're really turning the corner.
So what is robust? It would be a lot more than the 83,000 private sector jobs added in June.
The direction is right, but there's definitely room for improvement.
Lisa Lynch is dean of the Public Policy School at Brandeis University and a former chief economist at the Labor Department. The private sector has created jobs for 6 months straight, but not enough, she says.
Really what you want to see is month after month of 200,000 or more jobs added to the economy, the majority of those coming out of the private sector.
And we aren't even close to that right now.
No, 83,000 is a long way from 200,000.
One bright spot in the report comes with such a massive caveat that no one is celebrating. The unemployment rate dropped to 9.5%. Peter Morisi is an economist at the University of Maryland.
The unemployment rate fell simply because 650,000 adults quit the labor force. They stopped looking for work. They gave up frustrated, so they don't count.
Morisi says if you count all the people who are discouraged and those who would like to work full-time but only have part-time jobs, the unemployment rate would be more like 16%. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.